Welcome to TLDR Auspol, the podcast for the engaged-ish people of the world.
We record on the lands of the Gadigal and the Wurundjeri people. We acknowledge the traditional owners and pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Sovereignty was never ceded and that this land always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TLDR Auspol.
Woohoo!
I've got my very good friend Rhiannon with me.
Hi, Annabelle. I've
botched it up completely. I'm not even like talking like myself.
It was a very like newsreader-ish, but like that the policy is I don't edit.
And I also forgot like what I'm like my very good friend, Rhi.
Are we very good friends now? Has it been long enough?
It sounded like it came with a question mark.
Yeah, there was. Well, you know, I mean, friendship is something you should always work at. But
yes, this is what happened. I looked down at the show notes to go episode number because of the lost episode debacle. And it's not there. And I have no idea what episode we're up to. And
I think this might be 7. But this episode's a bit of a fun one because it's like a surprise. It's like a little Easter egg episode for all of our listeners. So last week we did a belated budget cover and we just decided that we were so pumped to get into recording via Zoom. We were so pumped to get into like regular catch-ups and stuff because if you didn't listen last week, we have a new team member on board, TLDR Auspol, and it's just like got us all pumped. Hi, Amanda. Got us all pumped all over again. And so we were like, cool, let's do it again. And so we just decided to do like follow-up budget eps like the next week instead of fortnightly. So look, I think you can be forgiven for being like, I don't know what episode it is. I don't know what day it is. Is Rhiannon my good friend?
Morning on a Tuesday. It's reflecting on our friendship. Like
totally.
Oh, I don't even know if we're recording. I don't even know what day it is.
I know. I feel a little bit like that. I really do. But we're here. We are talking about aged care and the budget. Which is super exciting. I'm so sorry if you hear beeps and stuff that you shouldn't hear. I think I might have just gotten an email that came through. But the policy is that I don't edit. So anyway, we're talking aged care policy. Annabelle, tell me, give me the recap from last week. We talked about the budget and
we
told everyone what budget had been allocated to what and what the budget means. We wanted to do a deep dive into a couple of the big areas and aged care was one that you were super pumped to talk about. So can you remind me what was in the budget for aged care this year?
This is what we said last week. For those of you playing at home, you might notice that it's the same thing. And it's lots of numbers and I haven't done my red leather, yellow leathers again this week. So I'm going to get tongue-tied. But anyway, it's $17.7 billion over 5 years responding to the Aged Care Royal Commission report. And actually, I'm going to stop there immediately because we've already had a bit of conjecture in the pre-show preamble, which we try and keep a bit short so we don't use all our good
content,
our good jokes. not that we have any. We actually had a bit of a discussion about whether that $17.7 billion is an umbrella across all of the figures that I'm about to read or separate to. Mm-hmm. And our beautiful, incredible, vibrant, intelligent partner in crime in our trio, Amanda, did a bit of Googling on the fly, which I couldn't even see her doing, and told us that the $17.7 is an umbrella figure and everything I'm about to read comes underneath that, with the exception of the COVID-19 response. So yep. I will continue. May I continue?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. You looked like you had something to say.
Don't I always?
So this is it's true. This is $6.5 billion for an extra 80,000 home care packages over 2 years. years to help more people live in their homes for longer, $3.2 billion to cover a $10 per person per day increase in payment to aged care providers, $3.9 billion to increase the number of care minutes each aged care resident receives per day to 200 minutes. So essentially, this funding has been broken up into five categories. One is home care. Two is residential aged care facilities and services, residential aged care quality and safety, workforce, and I've written here covenants, but I believe I mean governance because
I did fix that in the Google Doc. But
I've printed this out prior. Yeah.
And I actually Googled covenants to see whether I was missing something like crucial. I was like, wow, is this like some kind of other thing? Oh, no, she means governance.
That's classic Rhiannon, and that's a beautiful thing.
Really. I gave you the benefit of the doubt, as always.
Never.
I think, so one of the things we wanted to make sure that at the end of this episode was that our listeners had a bit of insight as to what it means for funding to be spent on those five categories. And so I think what's actually important for us to do now is to highlight how the current government policy approaches aged care so that when we're hearing things like, you know, a bajillion billion dollars spent on home care packages or whatever it was, as you can tell, I'm really into the detail. You've got a bit of an idea in your mind as to what that announcement means. So there are currently three main aged care services that our government funds, and they are in-home care, aged care or nursing homes, and short-term care such as respite care. So when it comes to in-home care, basically what the government are trying to do is provide support for people to stay independent for as long as possible. So this is things like help getting transport, food and meal services, things like Meals on Wheels, getting help doing their shopping and the housework, you know, health services that they may need, like physio, social activities as well. There's this really nice little part on the Department of Health website that talks about, it might be on the aged care website, specific website, where they go through all the different areas that in-home care supports. And it's like things to support my health, things to support my social life, things to support my community. So they've really thought about, you know, what are the different like pillars of someone's life to be able to stay in their own home for as long as possible. And there's two different ways that the government subsidizes this. So there's two programs. There's a Commonwealth Home Support Program, which is very general and really easy to access from what I can read. But for more complex needs, so where someone might actually need coordinated healthcare services, they've got these home care packages. So the home care packages, similarly for both of them, they're accessed by an individual going through an eligibility assessment. You find your endorsed providers and the government then pays those providers a subsidy to provide the services that you need. Depending on financial situations, so similar to receiving welfare, individuals may be asked to contribute something to their care, but the subsidies are designed to ensure everyone gets what they need to remain as independent as possible for as long as possible through those two specific programs. And one thing you'll note is that there was further home care packages funded in the budget, which is great. So the next area is the residential or nursing homes. So similar to schools, some are privately funded and some receive government funding. Commonwealth funded aged care homes receive subsidies to make care affordable. They're also regulated by the Aged Care Quality and Safety Commission, which is a Commonwealth level commission. And in some instances, they do offer places that aren't subsidized. So it's like there's not a single aged care home that's like won't take someone. You know, people are welcome everywhere, which is great. And it's actually also worth mentioning here that we're not just talking about old people when we talk about aged care, particularly when it comes to things like nursing homes. There's actually a whole separate episode we could do on young people residential nursing home facilities, you know, young people with, you know, really critical health challenges and illnesses that threaten their quality of life. And so, yes, we're not just talking about old people when we're talking about all of these things.
I'm so glad you've brought that up because that's such a huge passion point of mine, working in the brain cancer space as well. And I have my own personal experience with my husband. I don't know if I've talked much about that on this podcast, but my husband died 3 years ago. He was 31 or 32. He always used to tease me that I never knew his age or birthday. And that continues. But, you know, we even talked about that because, you know, he was smashing rehab, of course, and doing really well, but was sort of not able to go home. So there was this, there's this gap there. For young people.
And that, interestingly, you know, like we're going to mention the Royal Commission a couple of times throughout this episode, but that particular challenge of having young people in aged care was really brought to the fore in some of the recommendations of the Royal Commission, which I think is awesome. But yes, so another interesting point to note here is just around that regulation. So non-government subsidized homes may not actually provide care services because they're regulated at a state and territory level, which I'm going to talk about a little bit in a sec. So that is the second way that the government currently provides support to those vulnerable communities or vulnerable individuals. And the third is short-term care. So short-term care is can be respite care, but it also can be restorative care. So if it is deemed that an individual needs, you know, just kind of like a short break to get back on their feet, either after hospital or transitioning out of hospital, potentially after a health scare, you know, it can also be potentially after a mental health, something that's challenged their ability to stay on top of their mental health. There's this restorative care where that for up to 8 weeks they can access short-term care. Now, the interesting part about kind of going in and looking at those three key ways that the government currently provides support for aged care is that there's obviously a whole heap of peripheral ways that the government, like that's not the aged care system in and of itself. You know, like when it comes to these really big complex service delivery things or ways that we're supporting vulnerable communities, you know, think the NDIS, there is entire systems. But what's relevant for the budget is that when we break it down into those three areas, it's really easy to see that the government have chucked some cash at all three of those key areas. So that's nice. It's nice to know that at all levels of our current system, we threw some cash at it in the budget.
Yeah, and we've also sort of got the benefit here of looking, you kind of mentioned the Royal Commission too already. We've got the benefit of looking at this budget through the context of a Royal Commission. And I sort of wrote down, because I thought it was really important to note that the government's actually accepted all but six of the 148 recommendations that were handed down by the RC. So obviously there's big change coming, or there's, you know, big change being addressed with this funding. So do you want to, should we go straight into like your three key takeaways?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. For everyone who can't see me, I just threw my hands in the air. Like, I do care about aged care.
Your facial expression didn't change. I'm just calling it out.
I threw my arms up, but I was focused.
You punched the air, but you were focused.
Well,
whatever. I think it's good.
Maybe I should go into politics. Anyway. So the big long list of recommendations from the Royal Commission. If you're not sure what a Royal Commission is, go back and listen to episode 4.
Good plug.
Huge. Good plug. That was a good ep. So big long list of recommendations. And the first three were like, I think they were like 8 pages long, just the three of them, were all about the need for a new act to be written and implemented by 2023. So basically, what I thought I would do is give my little rundown on the importance of the act, because I had a couple of epiphanies about how the world works when it comes to legislation and policy when I was researching for this episode. And this was one of them, was that basically the act, legally it's the legislation that gets passed by Parliament. So we have to have a majority agreement on the legislation. And out of that act, what it kind of does is sets like the direction for how we're going to approach that particular policy area. And once we've agreed on that, the initiatives are then designed to meet the responsibilities of and the detail of that legislation. And so when I was kind of doing my research and going, right, we've got a budget that has highlighted big spend on aged care, and we've got recommendations that talk about rewriting the act. In all honesty, my thought was like, oh, why do we want to spend money rewriting an act? Why do we want to spend money like rewriting this thing and, you know, getting people to like just think more about it, you know, scratch their beards, whether they be men or women. I frequently sit down and scratch my beard.
You're at risk of alienating our 75% female Instagram following.
That's right. And I just needed people to know, I needed our ladies to know that I scratch my beard, that it is a non-binary phrase. But the realization that I had was that if we do rewrite this act, and that some of these, the detail around making sure that, you know, things like young people in aged care are really well addressed in the legislation, then all the initiatives we build out of that do start to build a new system. You know, and there was a great article in the ABC. We actually have kept record of our further reading today. We've done really well in our show notes and kept a good list, and I'm going to include it in the show notes that we upload to wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you can go and find it for yourself. But the ABC talked about this change as a movement towards a rights-based system, which is similar to the legislation that Medicare is built on, as opposed to a ration-based system, which is what we've operated on, you know, up until now. What it would mean is that needs are assessed on an individual basis. One question that it did raise for me, though, is I wonder if this would lead to similar issues to the NDIS. Anyway, that was just kind of like
another episode alert.
Yeah. It was a little Easter egg for you. But what's so important about the act is that it sets the scene for all of the initiatives around aged care. So I landed on, is it important for us to rewrite the act? Yes, it's important for us to rewrite the act. And I learned a little bit about what an act is and why it's so important to initiatives.
And now so have we.
And now so have we.
Because the reason I didn't say anything pretty much through that was because I was genuinely learning and listening.
I'm glad. Hopefully our listeners are doing the same. It kind of leads nicely into my second point, actually. So, you know, I just talked about the act leading to a new culture towards the kind of initiatives that we put out. And point two is hooray for systemic change. And I punched the air again, but I also smiled because I like systemic change.
It
was quite funny. As I was writing point two, at first I started to write this sassy little comment about, like, we're throwing all this cash at aged care, but we're just throwing it at the initiatives that we already fund, and they were like so bad that it led to a royal commission and blah blah blah. Why aren't we spending money on like actually redesigning the system? Because like I work in innovation and tech, and so like let's disrupt the system. Anyway, it turns out we are trying to. So right down the very bottom of the budget announcements page on the aged care. On the Department of Health website, there's these two little points around a lot of money being allocated to things like staffing around national planning and policy, local capacity building and local provider capacity, governance arrangements, rah, rah, rah. And as someone who is like quite wired to think about the system and loves a little bit of, you know, systems thinking, I'm encouraged by the fact that we're spending money on this. My caveat is that I feel like in a government kind of environment, it's hard to do this well. And I think it begs a lot of questions around how do we measure progress on these kind of more conceptual or nebulous kind of promises? Because the thing is, right, that, you know, I call this a wicked problem, not because aged care is wicked, but more so that the problem is itself is so wicked that when you start to solve it, you find more problems than you answer, you know, and you find more things that need solving than you solve. And so it's one of those big wicked problems, right? And we need really smart people to come in and help us think about this and help us redesign this system. And so we're going to have to spend money on people. We're going to have to spend money on salaries to entice people over into working for our country and scratching their heads or their beards on how we spend this public money.
That was a good little change there.
Good little save.
Stretching their heads.
Heads or their bids. So I'm all for, you know, spending a certain amount of public money on good people and making sure that we have good people around the table to help us redesign these systems. But I think my challenge is, like, what does it mean for progress to be communicated transparently on these things? How will I, as an everyday citizen, know whether or not the people that we are spending this money on are designing a good system? And so I'm keen to see how the government communicate their movement and progress on this, but I'm encouraged by the fact that we are approaching this as something that needs systemic reform. On to point three. Annabelle, you haven't said anything in a while. Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm good.
Great. Point three.
Look, I don't want to – the sassy point, I'm going to make it later, which is obviously not surprising.
No.
And I'm interested, you say, you know, like keen to see as an engaged citizen, like, you know, how the government communicates and moves forward on this, but you have confidence. But, you know, I don't have as much confidence as you.
This has been established before. Yeah.
I mean, again, not surprising in any context, but yeah.
Exactly.
I do agree with you. The way the government moves forward and communicates is going to be, you know, key.
Yes.
To
and
this.
I think also to kind of add a second caveat to that point is that I think this point would be hard for any government to act on, because we're talking about bureaucracy. We're talking about a system that was designed to make sure there was fairness. And when you're trying to be fair with so many people at stake, that's some of the reasons that bureaucracy holds things up, you know, is that it wasn't a system designed for speed. It was a system designed for justice, you know, which is super ironic in many ways. Mm-hmm. So I should make the point of, regardless of what government was currently in power, I think we would see that same problem of getting quality and speed on systemic design or systemic reform.
I'm just looking down at the title of point three and getting very excited to hear you say it.
Point three is about regulation.
No, you did not disappoint then.
Yeah, amazing. I'm so glad. I even like took a breath and I put a smile on my face, so I hope it came through. One of the things that I mentioned before, I was very surprised to discover that residential aged care is regulated at different levels, and that there could be this kind of structure, right? Because it seems like the kind of thing that you would want regulated at Commonwealth level. You know, like, it feels high priority enough that you would be like, let's have one point of contact and one regulator.
Totally.
We've spoken a little bit before on the podcast about how our system is designed to ensure that states can enact policy that's localized and relevant, you know, and we actually spoke a bit about this in detail in the lost episode about COVID, which is devastating. So I'm going to quickly touch on it now.
We could just say that about anything. We talked in deep detail about
this. Deep detail. We really tried to bring you guys on the journey lost episode. But during COVID, we saw this amazing articulation of our system, right, where ScoMo would come out and say, here is, at a federal level, here is a strategy as to how we're approaching COVID. And then the next day you would see the state premiers come out and say, this is what it means for Victoria, this is what it means for New South Wales, blah, blah, blah. And then the next day you would see the local councils head out to the playground and put the tape on the playgrounds, making sure that, you know, all of those things were looked after. So we saw this incredible... Making sure that Primrose couldn't play, but also making sure that Primrose couldn't get COVID from some other snot bag.
For good reason.
Yes. And when I think about things like this in lieu of that learning, I'm like, oh yeah, cool. Having our, you know, having regulation broken up has its benefits like that. But I'm in two minds about how the government have decided to approach this. But it's also how the Royal Commission have recommended they approach it, right? Because one of the recommendations from the Royal Commission was setting up a commission to like better regulate and better govern aged care. And that would mean that things like there is a certain standard of care that even private aged care facilities have to offer. So there is like basic level things that must be offered when it comes to things like a residential care. The home care packages, you know, would have to meet a base level of regulation regardless of like where they were being delivered. And so it's like, okay, the Royal Commission said we should establish this like regulation of governance. Awesome. And I don't think the government couldn't have spent a lot of money on it because it was a big recommendation of the Royal Commission. But I do always wonder whether creating more bureaucracy is the right way to go about it, and whether creating a new council or a new commission and adding further levels of complexity to something that's already been established as very complex is the right way to go about it. And it's really similar to the point I made on systemic change, where there'll be big money spent on people scratching their heads and thinking deeply about this. And we need to be okay with this to a point. But the challenge with bureaucracy is, to what standard and speed can we see it done well? And here I feel like we're adding an extra level of governance. So that's my point on regulation. I'm going to end it there because I've just spoken for a really long time. Annabelle, what were your 3 points? Take a deep breath.
Tough act to follow. Let's go. I have made copious amounts on this. I then went back and I couldn't understand most of my notes. So I may never know the meaning of the words query tax offset with a big circle around it and underlined.
It sounds like policy wonk lorem ipsum, you know, the like filler text on websites and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Query tax offset subsidy levy.
Yes. Well, actually, there was also a phrase that I'd written down was levy, but no one's up for it. So I just decided not to Google that. Great. Or go down that path if no one's up for it. I have so much to talk about, but I did get my thoughts down to 3 points.
Really
proud
of you.
But it was hard, Rhiannon. It was dang hard.
I don't doubt it. And I'm really proud of you.
Thanks. Well, first hear them and then see. So my first point, and I am burning to say this, aged care is a feminist issue.
Oh, huge.
I already knew that women outnumbered men in aged care, but when I was, you know, looking through the RC, it told me that 2 in 3 people using residential aged care and home care services are women. And I didn't realize it was actually that high.
Mm.
And then if you also throw in the fact that the aged care workforce is predominantly female, that even at home, Aussie women are consistently spend nearly double the amount of their day in unpaid care work. You know, the hours spent caring for adult family members has even doubled again for women over the past year. You know, bang, proper funding, culture change, compensation for workers, feminism. It's feminism. I made this point because I guess trying to figure out what order to say all of this stuff in, but I wanted to say it first, obviously, because as you can tell, I fucking love feminism. Oh, I think I swore.
Did you just swear? Oh no, we're going to have to tick the explicit box.
Under my breath. So sorry. I've done a really good job of not doing it to now.
We have made it through like this. 6 episodes or something, but anyway, it's okay. I'll tick the explicit box.
Look, it's really important to me. I think it sets the tone for everything else that I want to say. Because, you know, obviously feminism is important to me, but, you know, this is the government showing us how they handle a feminist issue in the context of, and I'll say this with inverted commas with my fingers, a women's budget.
Yeah.
So my second point is, you know, just use a little bit of inflammatory language, which I love. Residential aged care, I've found, has been called a human rights crisis, which isn't really surprising given the Royal Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said before, the aged care sector has received $17.7 billion. And like we said last year, over 5 years, depending on, you know, what that metric looks like. You know, economic modelers, including experts from the Grattan Institute, have said this is about half of what's needed to make a meaningful impact, and that the industry requires about $10 billion per year, which I thought was an incredible amount of money. So I pulled out a few examples. So one, with regards to residential aged care, the budget's made provisions for an extra $10 per resident per day. That equates to $3.2 billion annually. And that Grattan Institute report said that the sector would need an extra $7 billion on top of that funding for a meaningful impact within that sort of space. Another example here is home care, which has received $6.5 billion of that $17.7 billion over 5 years. That's for 80,000 home care packages, which we said before. There are currently 103 older people waiting for a package. So there's some conjecture about whether this is enough to clear the backlog. And horrifyingly, the Royal Commission told us that people have been dying while waiting for care packages. So those who will think it will clear the backlog are doing so on the assumption that more funding announcements will be made. And I sort of thought it was really interesting because last week, you know, you were talking about, you know, how does the government back this budget up next year? Do they double down on these kind of socialist efforts, or do they kind of dust their hands off and go, great, you know, we did that, that's done? And I think, you know, as we often sort of end up saying, time will tell as to whether or not, you know, this funding is backed up over time. When they make the next announcement, whether they'll wait the 5 years to make another announcement, you know, what that sort of looks like with all of that.
And I guess that kind of adds to what I was saying around like how is progress communicated on like the system reform as well, because exactly. It may be that like this announcement is actually redundant in 2 years' time because we've designed a new system to deliver that service. So it's like it's kind of like time will tell, and you know, hopefully progress will also tell as well.
I love your optimism.
One of us has got to be. Otherwise this whole place is going to the dogs.
Look, I agree with that, you know, in a blue sky sense. I agree with that, and I would love to see that too. I'll move on. And you'll be surprised I haven't said this already, but I'm going to say it. I'm going to bang the table and demand more. I got too excited about the joke I've written down. I'm going to go back. I've banged the table.
Just pretend she hadn't said that. Let's go again.
I have banged the table and I've demanded more money. The reason that I'm excited about this, you know, look, I'll take a huge hypothetical breath here. I'll say that I was okay with the amount of money spent. I'll unbang the table in hypothetical land. I know that those of you who are listening and keeping score will remember that a few episodes ago I said we needed to spend all our money on climate change. So if I was running the country, we'd have no money. So I recognize that me banging the table demanding more money is a bit sort of, I've just got to take this hypothetical breath and talk about, I guess, how we spend the money. The RC showed us that the money given to aged care providers is not always spent on aged care, and that the industry needs reform. There needs to be accountability in the system, civil penalties, a new regulator, and proper compensation for workers. And we've sort of talked about that a little bit. But I'm sorry, did somebody say workers?
Workers.
It was me. And now you. The Royal Commission dubbed the aged care workforce as understaffed, underpaid, and undertrained, which was pretty rough.
Huge.
But I want to put another spin on this. This work is complex, difficult, and emotionally draining.
Mm.
And I have some questions for our listeners on behalf of the workforce, maybe some homework. What's in this budget to improve wages for workers? How do we attract the needed 700,000 workers into the sector when these positions remain some of the lowest paid in our economy? Where will migrant and visa workers come from, especially in the context of COVID? In May, Australia's nursing union submitted an application to the Fair Work Commission seeking a 25% pay increase for nurses working in residential aged care and home care. And you know, look, it must come as no surprise to you or any of our listeners that I bloody love the union. And when I wrote this, I realized how little I've said I bloody love the union on this podcast, which is my whole job here. So I'll say it one more time. I bloody love the unions.
It should also be known that I don't hate the unions. Like in our pre-show amble. In our pre-show amble, Amanda was like, Ree, I'm surprised you didn't like rebut this in your notes. And I was like, well, actually, personally, I don't hate the unions, but just if we ran the country according to the unions, similarly, if we ran the country according to Annabelle, we'd have no bloody money.
We'd have a good environment, though.
We'd be alive.
All I'm saying is I'm willing to accept these episodes as canon, and I will be accountable for the things I say, and I'm really proud of that.
Great. One day when you're running the country, we'll bring it all back.
You'll be like, remember this? This is kind of one of the things I'm afraid of with this podcast. But anyway.
You should be, mostly because I'm vindictive like that.
Just like playing it on repeat.
Yeah.
I want to move forward to my favorite segment, which for those of you who have seen Avenue Q, what does this mean? This is the second musical I've referenced on this podcast, and I'm really proud of myself.
Good job, you. Annabelle, what does it mean?
Oh, yeah, I'll go first.
To you? Yeah, you're going first.
I don't know what I was waiting for.
Read your show notes.
To me, it means we listen the show notes. To me, it means we listen to the RC, which has told us that the aged care system needs a culture change. Yep. There needs to be accountability in the system. We need to fix the issues in the workforce. I think that the funding's a good start, but I think we need to see more funding. I think it needs to go further. None of us are getting any younger.
We certainly are not. No. Interestingly, I think for me, what this all means or meant, I'd love to know what it looks like for this to go further. I don't disagree with you, you know, that it needs to go further, but optimistically, I think this budget actually does set out to go further and has some infrastructure to it that allows for some big reform. But the challenge will be making sure it does get done and making sure that we communicate when it is, like, there is progress and stuff. So I think the bones of it tell us that there could be big reform and that it could go really far and that it could mean great things for all of the people supported by our aged care policy. I just hope it really does. And on that note, give me some parting thoughts, Annabelle. Like, where did you land? So we've gone and we've done this research on aged care policy, how money's being spent in the budget. Where did we land?
Yeah, to me, I actually think that the timing of this is super interesting, and we actually haven't talked about this much in this episode. And again, I don't know if anyone knows the answer to this. Maybe this is more homework and people will start to switch off because I'm giving them too much homework. But, you know, the whole way through, I keep wondering if COVID gave the government that extra little shove they needed to really put some big dollars towards the aged care industry. I mean, of course, the RC got the ball rolling, but when we look at what happened in the aged care homes, I mean, I'm from Victoria, so when we look at what happened here in particular last year, I feel like that must have provided a huge amount of context for the government, and a bit of like social wokeness probably didn't hurt the cause.
Yeah. Interestingly, I don't disagree with you, but I don't think that COVID was like the catalyst for this. I think COVID added to the momentum that was already happening. And I think my reflection on this is that, like, this, the system, you know, democracy has actually worked almost perfectly here. We should never have gotten to the point where aged care needed a royal commission, right? So that's a real shame. It's awful.
Yep.
But the fact was, it was identified we needed one. One happened. Heaps of recommendations were handed down. And then the following budget, heaps of cash was handed down. And so I think my reflection is, like, when we as citizens bring issues to the fore and we do it in the right way and the right processes occur, that the right change can be put into place. So let's see how the implementation goes. Is kind of my reflection.
Time will tell.
Time will tell.
Hashtag time will tell.
On that note, I think we might even be a little bit over time this week. I'm not quite sure whether we've really hit 30 minutes.
I have had a blast. I started timing, but it was admittedly a fair chunk of the way through.
And I could see the time was getting away from us, but I was also like, I feel like this conversation is really great, so I'm not going to stop it. And if we're like 5 minutes longer than normal, then sue us. But hopefully, like,
please
us.
Please don't.
Our listeners are feeling like they have a bit better an idea of how we support individuals that get support from our aged care policy, a little bit of an idea on what the budget sets out to do. Surprise, we popped up, you know, weekly.
Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. We're hearing your ear holes.
Hearing your ear holes.
That I didn't like it.
No.
I tried it. I didn't like it.
It's good, you know, like we're advocates for trying new things here. This whole podcast is trying a new thing. Annabelle, let's let our listeners go. This has been such a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you for recording this episode with me. Have a great week, and we will talk to you guys real soon.
Bye.